Welcome to the Grace Hour Show. My name is Jesse. I'm with Zane Turk today. And Grace Hour Show is a Christian program. We take a dive into daily challenges. We dive into faith, different doctrines, different books. And today we are continuing this weekly theme of the book of Daniel. Daniel is a great book. We have the privilege to do chapter 3. I think I always say that.
The privilege. It is a privilege.
It is a privilege. Thank you.
Every day is a privilege.
Thank you for building me up there. I'm trying to beat myself up already. Daniel chapter 3. So we have an amazing chapter. One that is, you know, maybe a lot of people know of the story. And so this is the chapter of the fiery furnace and the three Hebrew boys. And maybe just to give a quick, you know, picture of where we're at here. King Nebuchadnezzar has built this golden image of himself, right?
Yeah, it's just a golden image.
And it's 90 feet, I think, high.
Yeah, 90 feet.
It's about a football field high.
That's crazy.
That's a big old, yeah. That's a big old golden statue. So he built this big old golden statue, and he wants everybody to worship this golden statue. And so he calls everybody from, different nations, different languages and tongues, and, higher rankings too as well. You'll see it in about the first 12 verses. They repeat it a lot. There's captains, there's governors, there's judges. So there's very high up people, sheriffs, rulers. So this is a big moment. You know, this is like a Super Bowl moment that's going on here. Like everybody's attentive. Everybody is here. And they say once we play this music, so now they have this whole band here too as well. And we're just setting up this image because you can imagine what's going on. This band is here, beautiful music. You know, there's like at least six different instruments that they mention. Five different music instruments that they mention. And so they say when this blows, when you hear the sound, when the music plays, bow down to this idol, to this image that was set up. And so this is where we're at, and then this is what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to dive into the three Hebrew boys, their courage, their faith. You know, it wasn't all just from this moment, you know, but God kind of orchestrated or raised them up and built them up to prepare them for this moment. And we could relate it to somehow to today. And actually what this is going to be like kind of in the future. So that is like a quick chapter 3 of where we're going to take off. So maybe Zane, if you would like to kick us off here.
So Daniel, the book of Daniel, I mean, maybe we can just think about the chapters. We have chapter 1, which is that Daniel and his three friends, they're taken away in the first exile. We talked about that last week.
Pastor Ronaldo. Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah. And then this Monday was Pastor Ronaldo, yep. Pastor Steve.
That's right. Chapter 1. And they're taken away. They have the test, the first test of being brought into the king's palace, into his courtyard. And they're the best and the brightest, along with other young men who have been taken from their country. So they're in an unfamiliar place, surrounded by unfamiliar people, with unfamiliar idols, unfamiliar gods,
they're
unfamiliar
outcasts.
Foods, right? in chapter 1, they have a great first encounter with their conviction, like having to stand up with their conviction, right? They take the vegetable diet. They're healthier, better looking at the end of a certain amount of time. And that's like their first stand, and they're promoted.
Right? Yeah.
Chapter 1, they're promoted.
Promotion, well, already.
Right, already. So chapter 2 is when Daniel, he interprets the dream that Nebuchadnezzar has. And in that dream that Nebuchadnezzar has of the golden image with the golden head, the arms and the chest of silver, the torso and the legs of, I think it's bronze, and then there's iron, and the feet are made of iron and clay, right? So there's this image, but a little stone cut out by no human hand hits the feet, and then the whole statue disappears. It's like a chaff in the wind. But then in chapter 3, Daniel is promoted because of that, and so are his friends. at the end of chapter two, he asked for his friends to be promoted. So now his friends are in the province, they're leading in the province of Babylon. And it seems like Nebuchadnezzar forgot the part about the stone hitting this image. Yeah. And he just makes a golden image of himself. Great dream. Right? Great dream. I'm the golden head. So now I'm going to make an entire image of gold, 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. So yeah, it's like kind of a progression. This book is a progression. The structure of the book is actually very fascinating, how you have chapter one, chapter three, and chapter six are all stories of conviction that was held to and how God delivered them, right? Mm-hmm. Chapter one was with the food. Chapter three is with the fiery furnace. And chapter six is with Daniel in the lion's den. Right, he prays to his God, and he's sent in the lion's den. So there's those three stories, right? Awesome. They all mirror each other. Chapter two and chapter seven have to do with dreams, right? How Daniel, chapter two is Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Chapter seven is Daniel's dream. And then chapters four and five also have a parallel of Nebuchadnezzar and his humility. How God humbled him. He was proud, and then God humbled him, and then at the end he had humility. But then Daniel 5, Belshazzar, he sees the writing on the wall, but he has pride in his heart, and he is assassinated that night. So the whole first seven chapters are very intertwined. Wow. In the text, in the context of the book. But as we're here in chapter three, it's so important to note that we're kind of diving into something that's so much bigger than just what happens in this chapter, right? Yeah. Like we were talking about earlier, if we can just read verse one, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits, breadth 6 cubits, and he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And he gathers all of these leaders, the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So they have this party, this gathering to dedicate this image, right? Hmm. And we have to kind of look through, we have to look through what's happening and see the greater picture. And the greater picture is that man, since the beginning of his free will and his free volition, has gone against God's authority. And the kingdom of Babylon has direct ties to the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11. They're in the same region, very close to each other. Babylon was actually built close to this tower, relatively close geographically, and it bears the resemblance of the defiance that man has towards God. Mm-hmm. That man is saying, we don't actually need you, God. Actually, we're going to do it the opposite of what you say, right? In Genesis 11, God said, be fruitful and multiply and disperse over the whole earth. But what did they do in Genesis 11? But they came together. Mm-hmm. They didn't disperse, and they were looking to build their own kingdom to get up to heaven. So there's something bigger behind this image that Nebuchadnezzar made. And it has to do with man's defiance against God, that man wants his own way, his own religion, and his own idol to worship. So he separates himself from submitting to God's will and God's plan. So that's kind of the backdrop of this chapter. And we can see as we look through, maybe you want to talk about, you can pick up with just like the instruments, the music, the song, and the way of the world as opposed to the way of God. We talked about that a little, or whatever you have on that. Just throw the alley-oop up there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like music is beautiful, and you know, God uses it. We have King David. He's a master of the psalm and harp, and there's something about music that really, and we do it in worship as in to like prepare our hearts, you know, to come before God and be like, okay, Lord, I'm here and I'm worshiping you. It's supposed to, right, magnify him and exalt him. And it's interesting that they use music to really almost like a hypnosis kind of thing. Kind of like when you hear the sound, when you hear the sound, like drop down and bow down before this golden image. And it's very interesting because in that, when they first did it, it says, where is this in chapter? The first time that they bowed down. Yes, in verse 10, after that they play this music.
Verse 7.
Is it verse 7?
As soon as the people
heard so many
the
times. There, right?
So many lists.
When all the people, yes, they and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image. And as I was reading this and I was seeing commentaries, I felt like they did it immediately.
Yeah.
Like they didn't hesitate. They didn't question it. And how easy is it for us to, you know, conform, you know, but that's another image. But did you have something more on the music part?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point that because it is listed so many times, right? We have the list of what kind of music, what kind of instrument is going to be there. And I think I really believe that it's a picture of something that is bigger, right? It's like the course, in this text, it's the course of the world. It's the sound that they're making, the music. They all are playing the same song, right? But who's the conductor? Right. Mm. Obviously what we can see with our eyes is that they had someone leading them in the music, but really the picture is that there is someone conducting the course of this world.
Yeah.
And that, this request is a request of manipulation, right? When you hear the sound, bow down and worship. Mm. But if you don't bow down, then you're going to be thrown in the fiery furnace.
Yeah.
Right. And it's interesting to think about, is there ever any time in the Bible that God requests to be worshiped? Mm. I don't think there is any time in the Bible where God says, worship me. Mm. In the Psalms, we read people are saying to other people, worship God because of how good he is.
Yeah.
But the result of man seeing God is that they immediately fall down and worship because of God's glory, right? Moses, when Moses fell down and worshiped God, Joshua chapter 5, he fell down and worshiped the Christophany that Christ was there. He fell down and worshiped. But this was a result of seeing the glory of who God is. Mm-hmm. But here there's a manipulation in this chapter that you have to worship this golden image. And if you don't, you're going to have consequences. So it's very interesting that this is the world system we live in today. Nothing has changed from this chapter until today, as far as the world system goes. Mm. The manipulation, the force, the distraction. It's almost like a river of worldly distractions, right? I just think about that. Like the music is playing, you're going to fall down in worship, and nobody's thinking about it, like you were saying. Everyone's just obeying.
Yeah.
And the world is like this today, is that there's the sway from Hollywood, the new movies, the new songs, the new leaders, the whatever the newest, coolest thing is, the newest app on your phone. You're in the flow of the distractions that the world is sending. And today it's not a gold image. Like we can't really relate so much to idolatry in our culture. Mm. The Eastern countries are able to relate much more to these images, right? But the way that we can relate to it is that there is a flow of doctrine, like the teaching. There's so much teaching in a movie from Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's just not it's not like in a classroom.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the course of the world. And there's a song and the rhythm of the world, and it's distracting from they're not singing about sin. They're not singing about judgment. Mm. They're not singing about the righteousness of God, but it's a distracting, pleasureful, like self-satisfying song. And we are very susceptible to getting caught up to that.
Yeah.
And that's why this chapter is so important, is because there were three boys. There are three young boys who they had something going on with God. right? They had something going on with God, and they weren't in the flow of the course of this world, right? And I don't want to go too long, but one more point is just that it takes discernment to see what's behind the image of gold, because this image is beautiful, right? It's well-crafted. It's very large. And it says that Nebuchadnezzar set it up on the plain of Dura. So this is like maybe, I was reading a little bit about it, that there was a mound which was a couple miles south of the city of Babylon. But this mound was set up with a pedestal, and on this pedestal was this image. So it not only was hot, such a tall image, but it was on a plain, which is like a large open area with little trees. So this is like in the middle of this whole landscape. The only thing you can see for miles and miles is a statue.
You're going to see it.
You're going to see it.
It's going to catch your eye.
You know? And it's going to hit, the sun is going to hit it and reflect, and it's beautiful and mesmerizing, right?
Wow.
It's a beautiful image. It is. Yeah. But these boys had something going on, right?
Yeah. And it's funny because like the world, you know, we know that Romans 12, just like be not conformed to this world. And like you're saying, it's not a new thing, you know. The same thing that's going on here is, you know, even going on in today's world is what you're saying. And it's interesting because here they want an outward compliance. They want an outward, reaction, bow down before it. But I love how God, and you're saying like God doesn't say, hey, worship me. But God wants like an inward. He doesn't really, the outward will come, but he focuses more on the inward. As here, it's just like, if you don't bow down, if you don't do what I say outwardly, then you're cooked.
Literally, you're cooked.
And so, but that is, like Babylon represents the system that demands this. And we see patterns of this throughout our culture. But like you said, these three Hebrew boys had something going on. I think that is an important thing, you know, like they didn't just get here and get this great faith and this great, and then start conviction right here, you know, like that. And we see in chapter one, Daniel prepared in his heart, like this was a preparation, you know, they were taught, you know, what was it? The Torah at the time. And, you know, these books. And so they had the law, they had these books and they read them and they were dedicated to them. And then captivity came, and then they had, you know, I love it how it was, Daniel, and he had his guys around him, you know? And that's like a part of unity that we need in the body of Christ. But this conviction came way before this, you know? And maybe, you know, like we could think, oh, I want to do this big thing for God, or like I want my, you know, go out by faith in a big way, but it really starts so small, like with the food. You know, saying no to the food. And so it's amazing how God was building them and preparing them, these three Hebrew boys, for this moment to say in front of a large crowd, in front of everybody who bowed down. I didn't say anybody else. I didn't see anybody else, you know, get called out. And it was crazy because we were saying before, they're promoted, you know, they're promoted even in like the world. But because they want to bow down, it doesn't matter, you know? And so it's amazing that God just prepared them all this way. And what can we say about that? Just like, like saying maybe yes to certain things, but saying no to the little things, like having these small convictions and allowing God. And that's how God works, like in small ways, the Holy Spirit. Can you imagine? I remember telling, I think, my wife that. Can you imagine, like, God dealing with all of our problems and all of our situations and problems all at once?
Yeah.
You know, it's like we'll be overwhelmed, we'll be crushed.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't change at all because we'd be so scared. But God is so gracious. Like, he does like little bit at a time, you know, and he teaches us little by little. So I love how God prepared them, because this whole crowd, the music's going, the gold shining, the king is there.
Yeah.
And then we get called up in front of the king for not bowing down. And then it's like the king's fury. Nebuchadnezzar was raging. Now you're in front of the king of the time, you know. And so now there's another opportunity to step back from what you did before. Now I give you another chance to bow down. And right?
Yeah. I mean, if we think about this, the spirit of Babylon in the world, we're here in Baltimore, Maryland,
Baltimore.
Baltimore. Sorry. We're in the United States of America. We're our country is at an interesting time, but we're still much different from other countries in the world. You know, there's the European culture, there's the Asian culture, the African culture. So the Babylonian, this golden image, the spirit of Babylon, it's not just from culture to culture, but it's a very broad thing, right? And it's not just for this generation, but it's keeps going generation to generation.
Yeah.
It's really the spirit of Satan against the spirit of Christ, right? The spirit of the Antichrist against the spirit of Christ. Mm. And they have this demand to worship what is not God, but we have something very amazing, like you're saying, is that we have the ability to receive something from God that nobody can take from us, right? Mm. And this world will give us things that we can have that can very easily be taken from us. And I love talking sometimes when we're on outreach, we talk to people and we ask them questions about their life. Like, what is something that you have that nobody can take from you? You know, that's such a great question.
Yeah.
What is something that you have that nobody could take from you? Mm. Maybe, you know, they'll say my family or my goals, you know, and these are good things. And I agree, like these are things that cannot be taken away from us, but actually they can be.
Yeah.
And death is what can take away these things. And that's what the spirit of Babylon doesn't want to bring up, you know? Like this thing about death and the judgment and God, because when people start thinking about these topics, you have to answer some hard questions. And these guys have answered those questions in their heart. Like you're saying, they have the training, the teaching, and God working in their life, to really develop their character and to make them men of God who have the ability to live by faith when it's challenging.
Yeah.
You know, so this spirit of Babylon, it's not a new thing. It's always been there, and we can kind of see it in the text, the demands that they have, and the consequence of going against the grain, right? Because now they've gone against the grain, and there are people who maliciously accuse them.
Yeah.
Right. These men, they don't bow down. They're in your own government, Nebuchadnezzar. Yeah. Wow. They don't bow down, and then he's enraged, right?
Yeah.
He's enraged, mad. He's ripping mad.
And we got to read this too as well, so because this is so good. This starts in verse 14. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do you not serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now, if you be ready, that what time you hear the sound of corn, flute, horn, sackbut, dulcimer, I don't know that one, and all the kinds of music, it's with the S, music. That's interesting.
We need you shall fall down and worship. Band.
You shall fall down and worship which I have made. You know, wow. But if you worship not, you shall bow cash in the fire in the same hour." And then he says, "And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" There's always mocking, you know. There's always mocking, right? Yeah. To go like, what God? Mm-hmm. You know, where is he? You know.
Yeah.
And wow.
But Pharaoh says that too, right? Exodus 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is the Lord that I should obey him, right?
Mm, yes.
There's that attitude, right?
Yeah.
Against God, defying.
You're going to learn today, right? But then it says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered. I love this. You know, sometimes we have to answer the king. It said, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. And your, what was your?
Yeah, we have
no need to answer. I love that. This is with our Bible college group. I remember Nathan, Ben Sku, and this is the verse right there.
Yeah.
"We are not careful to answer you in this matter." I just remember us saying that over and just like being on fire. Like, what are they saying here? They hit on it in day one a little bit and about like a no compromise. Mm-hmm. And it's a confident conviction in God. like, you can't buy me. You can't scare me in a way. Like, they have such a deep conviction in their life, and it just comes out. We are not careful. And what a time to even say that, but they had to say that. So what can we say to this? How can we have this kind of answer in our life, you know, with things? We're not careful to answer the this matter.
Yeah. I love that. Like, we're not careful. We have no need to answer you. There's a certain confidence that comes with living before God. Mm. Where we don't need to defend ourselves. We don't need to.
Wow.
We don't need to say anything, right? They answered him, but they're saying, we don't need to actually answer you. Like, I know whom I have believed, you know. It's an amazing thing.
Wow. Isn't it? Yeah.
A lot of times, maybe we, the flesh has to defend itself a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Defending, fighting, biting back. But they're saying, we don't need to answer you, actually.
Wow.
Because we believe God, you know.
Wow. It's like true faith is in God's character, because we see, like, later on, just like, then they say, like, even if he doesn't save us, you know, like, like, we have full confidence that he can, but even if he doesn't,
Who else had this attitude in the Bible? But Christ did, actually.
Mm.
He was before Pilate.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to say anything, right? I don't need to answer you according to this.
Wow.
Like, are you the king of the Jews? Like, why don't your servants fight?
Wow.
Right? Doesn't it say that before Herod, he didn't answer him a word?
Mm-hmm.
Herod was waiting so long to see Christ. He was waiting so long because he heard of all the miracles and all the signs and wonders. But Jesus did not answer him one single word. You know, like a lamb, he was led to the slaughter. Like a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth.
Wow.
Right. So he knew that he was in God's will. He knew that God was with him, and he had no need to answer. He was not careful to answer. Right.
I love it. And you were saying before, like, how quick are we to defend ourselves and have to come up with an answer and a defense for my faith and all this stuff. But can I just be quiet and just maybe just give a simple answer?
Yeah.
Simplicity, right? Isn't that the gospel? Like, don't go from the simple gospel in Jesus Christ and just saying the truth and saying what the Holy Spirit conveys on your heart. It doesn't have to be all sought out and be elaborate and, you know, oh, you're in front of a king, so now I'm going to be different, you know, because this ain't just a normal person. And I remember, like, when I was in my second year, I think we're outreaching and I saw these guys. We're outreaching. I'm talking to everybody, you know. But then I see these three guys coming around with suits. I just, you know, I wanted to, but it didn't come out.
Yeah.
It didn't come out, you know. And I beat myself up still. Still, just kidding. No, like, I pray, like, Lord, you can do it, you know. But it's just like, it is true. Like, people with status or something like that, like, maybe our faith squeals down and where we... Yeah, we don't even say, we don't defend ourselves or whatnot or trust in God. We just, like, cower down. But these three Hebrew boys, they didn't. And they were able to stand up before the king, even with a death sentence on their life.
Amazing, huh?
Like, that's incredible.
What a story we have in our Bible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't get better than this. You can't write a better script.
Oh, this is crazy.
You can't write a better script. And this actually happened, you know.
So let's read 17, 18. If it be so, this is Shadrach, Meshach, and I wonder who's speaking.
Mm. Oh, that's a good point.
But unison. Regardless, these guys are in unity, right?
Because
they all go through with it. You know, you can imagine maybe Meshach. Meshach seems like the guy, maybe.
Yeah.
But they're all together. No, you know, Shadrach's not walking away like, I don't know this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that could be, we see that in movies all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
These guys had perfect unity. It's beautiful.
You're right. You're right. That's also a very good point, is that we have to have these people, like, alongside of us, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's so encouraging, you know?
Yeah.
We need, like, we are following somebody, right? We're, somebody is discipling us. And then we have brothers like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, like they had each other. And then they're discipling someone, right? So we have those three people in our life, someone who can disciple me, someone who I can fellowship with, like someone I can be a true friend with.
Yeah.
And then there's someone I'm discipling. Like are those three people that we have to have in our life, you know?
Yeah.
And they had each other, you know? So who's speaking?
Yeah.
This is good.
They all are. If it be so, verse 17, our God, you know, plural, love that, whom we serve is able. He is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand. I love that. There's confidence in that we will be delivered. But in 18, but if not, be it known unto you, talking to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up.
We can have a little fun with this one.
That is good.
Right? So there's three sentences here, right? What if Shadrach is the first one? Like they're standing before him and he's like angrily, Nebuchadnezzar's like, who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? And then there's like kind of a silence, you know? And then Shadrach is like, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to answer you. You know, however he says it, I don't know. Yeah. And then Meshach steps up.
Ooh.
If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace. Whoa. And then they realize like, oh, wait, that's kind of a big ask.
Yeah.
And then Abednego is like, but if he doesn't, we're still not going to serve you.
Wow. Yeah. You
know, I don't know. How did it go? It's fun to think about.
I could see that. I could see that.
We can have a little play, a little skit for the offering.
Wow.
The three guys acting this out.
But yeah, like, I love that. Like, it's like, do I need a miracle? Because we don't know God's, they don't know God's will at this time, you know? They have in their heart, they have great conviction that he can deliver them. But then again, it's not, they don't know God's will, you know? So, but they're believing like he can and he will. I know my God, because they know his character.
Yeah.
Their faith is not based on whether he intervenes or not. I think that's an amazing point.
Yes.
Like, it's even if he doesn't, we will not bow down, you know? It will be,
What consolation should we find in the scriptures? What encouragement should we find in the story of the Red Sea, the story of the manna in the wilderness, right? The water coming from the rock. Moses, his hands are up, and Joshua is winning the battle below. Joshua asks God, like, can you have the sun stand still so we can fight this battle? And the sun stands still. Like, these guys haven't seen a miracle in their life.
Wow.
You know, these guys, they were taken away from their land, but they had the scriptures, right? They had the stories of God's faithfulness.
Wow.
So their faith is coming from the same encouragement that our faith comes from.
Good.
Have you seen a miracle in your life? No. But I know that God did split the Red Sea. I know that he did feed 3 million people in the wilderness for 40 years.
Yeah.
He did it, right? I know that by the word of the Lord, the heavens were made. I believe that. So we have the same encouragement. And if God made the heavens by his word, can he not with his word change my life and my circumstance or my trial? So we have the same encouragement that they have, actually.
Wow.
Because if anybody had an excuse, it would be them. Like, we saw our city get destroyed and we were taken away. You know, God's not with me.
Yeah.
Right? But no, faith is not what is seen, but faith is what is heard and believed in my heart. And I love that. I love that. And the next great portion, maybe we can talk about, but if not, right? But if not, if God doesn't save us, what do you think?
But if not, be it known unto you. I mean, we see that even in the disciples, right? You know, like they ended up being martyred for their faith. And like God kind of prepared them and told them that. But you know, it's like, all right, God's in control. I'm following him. I love him and he's with me and everything's going to be okay. You know, in one sense, yeah. But in another sense, like this life could go You know, we talked about, who were we talking about last week? Ezekiel?
Ezekiel? No. I don't know. We were talking about a lot of things.
Ezekiel, though?
Yeah, well, Jeremiah was Jeremiah. Our book. Yeah.
Jeremiah. Like his life, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, tough life he had, but he had great joy, and he preached the word, and he continued in it, regardless of the outcome and the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love that heart, you know? And it's... Yeah, when you're in a position, it's tough.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is, like, we have the word of God, and as we really meditate it and fully believe it and know that, like, it is true, like, the seas were split. God created the world, and he created man, and we can see it, this beauty in it. Like, he has all power and control, and he does, regardless if your circumstances feels like it's out of control.
Yeah.
You know, and it will be. It might feel like that. It probably felt like that for these boys. Like, what are we doing? Yeah. Like, they're probably sweating bullets up there because apparently they were like head to toe. They had the hat. They did. They were ready. They were like a starter kit, man. Yeah. They were ready to get lit. Man, right? They had everything you do not want at a fireworks show. And these boys came unannounced to them. They're going to be thrown right in the fire. But I love how they put that there, though, because it showed it's like they should have been toast. They should have been gone.
Been toast,
there's no way that the camel's hair came out untouched. but like it's just like even a bigger praise and glorify God. It's just like us, like we put on these clothes, you know, and we put on this stuff, but like God's like, what are you doing? Like, I'll take care of it in a way, you know? Yeah. Like, we do everything wrong, and we prepare the wrong way, and we show up, and God comes through. That's kind of like our life, you know? So, but what do you say? But if not?
Yeah, I think that it has such a contrast with the beginning of the chapter, that the world wants us to think that this is it. Get yours in this world.
Mm.
You know, while you're living here, make it count. Get as much pleasure as you can, get as much wealth as you can, get as much fame as you can, you know, because you got to make it count. You got to make this one count.
Yeah.
But these guys, they can see something else. Even if I'm not delivered, even if I go in the flame, I have a hope. I have a hope. And I'm sure it was talked about in the first chapter that their names were changed, you know. Mm-hmm. Their names were changed. They had Hebrew names, and they were given Chaldean names, Aramaic names. But what is amazing about this chapter is that they, on the surface, they looked like the Chaldeans. On the surface, they looked like Babylonians with the dress, the language, maybe the way that their faces were done, like Joseph looked like an Egyptian. Yeah. They had the makeup and the style and the language, but there's something deeper than that, that they knew who God is. They knew that he was able to deliver them. And if he didn't, they knew that they would be with him when they died. You know, they knew that there was something more than this life. They knew that it wasn't the end, but that there was a reward that they were looking forward to. And the world doesn't have the reward to look forward to. They only have this life. They only have what is seen. They only have what is on the surface. But these men, they had a deeper life. They had a deeper hope in their captivity. Mm. And they knew their real identity. And that was important. They knew where they came from and where they were going. And that's why that was the substance that allowed them to say, but if not, right? Because we need that substance to tell us. We need substance to say things like this. And it really does come from that renewed mind, like you mentioned earlier. Yeah. Like not being conformed to the world, but being transformed by the renewal of your mind. So a sentence like this comes from a renewed mind where I believe God through faith that there is something more. And that if I die, it's not the end.
Yeah.
You know?
And we even see in Jesus' life, right? And like, it's like, you know, take this cup from me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if it can you take this cup? But then in the end, and like he says, not my will, but your will. And that kind of like matches up here. It's like, I want to be saved. I want to be delivered, Lord, but it's not my will.
Yeah.
It's your, and that is like full submission, you know? full submission. And even Jesus Christ, like, showed us that, you know, he was like under the Father. He was always going to the Father. But at that point of your in time, like, he had to fully, like, kind of show us that even his own mind was trying to get out of it. But he's like, no, I fully submit, you know, to your plan. And I guess maybe another point when they're cast into the fire. So these guys get thrown into fire. And well, that's a huge point. I mean, what do we see in the fire, right? We see a fourth man. We see another person in the fire. And so, and Nebuchadnezzar says, it looks like the Son of Man. Like, how does he even know that? Maybe you heard about it, and maybe he read the Bible before or whatnot. Like, what does this all mean? And just like, as you know, as a simple term, as we're going through our trials, I love it. God doesn't, like, deliver these guys from it, but he's actually in it with them. Mm. He's in the fire with them. He doesn't calm the fire himself. He doesn't, you know, go another way, but he's like, nope, I'm bringing you in, and I'm going to be there with you. Yeah. And so beautiful.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
We have a God that's with us in the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a God
another
with us
in the fire.
Come on.
Standing next to me. So good. That's a song, by the way, guys.
That's a song. Great one. Yep. He is in the fire with them. And I don't know how much can we say about that. It's amazing. It's amazing that Christ was there with them, and they didn't have when they came out, they were unbound. Like, they went in bound.
Yeah,
they went in with their chains on, with their hands and their feet tied. And when they came out, the ropes were burned away, but they weren't burned away, right? And the smell of smoke didn't touch them. The smell of the fire didn't touch them. Mm. I have seen people in my life that have gone through very terrible things, right? But the smoke of the fire is not on them. Mm. Like, the smell of the fire. Like, God has healed them, and he has delivered them, and they have come out like without any evidence of the trial, but only further glory, only further sanctified, and further showing God's glory through their life and through the way that they have trusted him through their trial. Mm. That this is actually a real thing that we can experience in our life, is that when we go into the fire, the tested genuineness of your faith, though it be tested by fire, right? That's Peter. That when we go into the fire, Christ can really meet us there. And it's more real than anything I've seen. Like, we have the golden image on one side that's like, worship this golden image. But on the other side, we have a God who will be in the fire with us. Mm. He doesn't need to be seen. He's not going to be seen by the masses, right? But he'll be seen by those who have faith to see him. Because blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see God. Mm. And they'll see the one that's in the fire. But they had to go there to see him. And when they came out, they had no chains on, they had no smell of smoke, but they had something in their heart. You know, they know God. They know who he is. Mm. Right? That's a beautiful, beautiful message from Daniel 3.
And then and then through that, like, who Nebuchadnezzar's seen it.
Yeah.
And like, through the trial, like, someone maybe ends up seeing it and sees God in it, sees God in your life.
Yeah.
And then they receive. And then this, you know, changed Nebuchadnezzar for a moment.
Yeah.
Until we'll see, for a while. But made a decree and said, this God's a real deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful picture.
And they see the fourth man in the fire. Like, but then they come out of the fire, right? And he's gone. But they know that he's not gone. Mm. I love that. That's so amazing. Yeah. He's not just in the fire, but he's with us always.
Wow.
Right? But I see him very clearly in the test, you know.
Yeah.
But I also know when I leave the test, he was there, but I know he's here now. Mm. And Christ is with us. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you.
Mm.
Right? My spirit will fill you daily. My word will feed you daily. You repentance, you can always be restored to me. And we live a life where we walk with Christ every day. Mm. You know?
Yeah. Wow. Praise God.
Yeah.
That's so good. I mean, I had a question too. Where's Daniel?
Right? Right? That is the question.
Where's Daniel and Daniel in this chapter?
Where is he?
But this is it's good
as of this one.
As we close, it's a good study. Relate this Daniel 3 to Revelation 13. Revelation 13 is just like the end times, and you have the beast or the Antichrist and this image that is, so there's so many similarities in Revelation, as we'll probably talk about a lot throughout this week, Revelation to Daniel, the end times, and from, so like you were saying before, there's nothing new. I saw something interesting that they said Daniel is like a representation of the church.
Mm.
Not Ooh, there.
Let's go.
Not there during the tribulation.
Not there. Not
Amen.
There.
So thank you for joining us today. Mic drop. And don't forget to subscribe, guys. I'm glad we had a little fun there
with the camel
Shadrach,
hair.
Meshach, and Abednego. The three Hebrew boys, the camel started kid.
You're a flame.
Guy just might as well walked in with fireworks all strapped up to his body. Oh, Medium man.
Rare.
And God came through. Wow. yes, please subscribe, guys. We hope that you got a little bit out of that. And, God is with you in the trials and the fire. And, have people around you and just give it to God, Lord. Lord, teach us something new in this book of Daniel. And we thank you for Daniel's life and these great men of faith. Thank you guys for joining us. Have a blessed day.